Should we talk about your voice first off?
Might want to explain this one. It might be a tough one to explain tonight on television. I feel like, actually, I don't feel bad because I feel fine. My voice, though, you remember Dave Manson, Chicago Blackhawks defenseman, big tough guy, controversial scrap once upon a time with Scott
Stevens.
Oh, yeah,
he's great.
Yeah.
Inspired Squeaky Frome.
Manson.
Oh, Dave Manson.
Okay, Dave Manson, not Charlie. Not Charlie. And the Summer of Love, when I was born, 1969. Yeah. Tate LaBianca. And then Trent Reznor bought the LaBianca house, I believe. Well, no, the Sharon Tate residence. Anyway.
That's right.
And then claimed that he had no idea of its historical past. Okay, Trent. Right, yeah. Why are there piggies all over the wall? No, Dave Manson used to have...
That was one of the best scattered Merrick things I've ever heard. That we were all over the place,
listen,
but it
all
came back to a great place.
When I was a kid, my favorite book was Vincent Bugliosi's Helter Skelter. I was fascinated with the man. I mean, I was fascinated with everything in the summer that I was born. I was born on July 9th, 1969, all right? And that summer, there was the Manson murders, the United States landed a man on the moon, and Woodstock. And I've been fascinated with all three my entire life. Anyhow, I digress. Dave Manson used to have a normal voice, a quite normal voice, like a regular, everyday, you know, hey, Joe guy voice, until he fought Sergio Mameso. I think it's when Manson played with Chicago. Mameso was a St. Louis Blue. And St. Louis and Chicago used to get at it. I mean, that was a time where you won that division with 60 points and no one cared about sticks or pucks. They just wanted to throw down. Mameso caught him with a missed punch. All right, he's aiming for Dave Manson's head. He misses and catches Manson in the throat.
Ah.
And if you've ever been, like, even just tapped in the Adam's apple, tapped anywhere, you know how much it can kill. Imagine taking the full force of a punch. And listen, Mameso was not, by any stretch of the imagination, a small guy by the standards of the day. He was a pretty big dude. Caught him with a full punch right in the throat, and it lowered Dave's voice forever. Ever since then, Dave Manson's talk like this. He's kind of talked like Tommy McVee. Tommy McVee meets your impression of Phil Esposito meets Ken Danico. That's what essentially what Dave Manson's voice has become. Yesterday after the podcast, I don't know why. Like, I did Hockey Central at noon, filled in for Millard yesterday, did our little podcast, had a meeting with the PD at the Fan, and then went home. Wow. And by the time I got home, it was like scratchy and felt crappy. And then by the time I went to bed, I'm like, I can't even speak. Like, I sounded like a church mouse last night when I went to bed. And Claire's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, I don't know. I think I just lost my voice. Anyway, it's a little better today. I shouldn't push it. I've got Hockey Central tonight from 11 to 11:30. And there are 11 games, and that means 11 sets of highlights that I need to call.
Listen,
on Hockey Central.
You're someone that's in broadcasting. I've always wondered this. How do these play-by-play guys stop from this happening? Like, I get a bad throat. I get a bad throat if I have a cigar and 5 beers on the road. But, like, which is my own self-infliction. Is it just that they treat themselves better because of this? Why doesn't Doc Emmerich just ever come on the air and he's like, you know, why don't we ever hear that?
You know, gargling salt water is one that I've always done, which kills all the bacteria in your throat. And listen, if anyone has any homespun recipes, I mean, sucking garlic is another one. You ever tried that when you have a sore throat? You get two pieces of garlic. I'm serious, dude. It's gross. And don't be around anyone intimately after you're done.
You pop the garlic out of its bulb, and then you just put the whole thing in your mouth and just suck on it?
Yeah, one on each side of your cheek.
Like it's a butterscotch?
It's like you're downing some Werther's. No, you put one on each side of your cheek. And you just suck on them. It clears you right up, dude.
When you does Claire pack up the kids and say, we're going, we can't be with daddy right now?
Yeah. At that point, she goes to her mother's house. And I'm Jeff Merrick, party of one.
Merrick, party of one?
Yeah, that's what I become. You know what? If anyone has any homespun remedies for scratchy throats or bad throats, please send it my way on Twitter. You know what's a good one? Cranberry juice. A lot of broadcasters and actually a lot of singers. And I've always wondered this about one guy.
Who's calling me?
One guy I've always wondered about specifically how he does it. And you've been to his concerts. I've been to his concerts. Dude, how does Dave Grohl do it?
I don't know.
Because that guy screams regular.
Yeah, I went to a Foo Fighters show at the Verizon Center here in D.C. And he's from Vienna, Virginia, so it was Hometown Boy Comes Home. Dude, they played 3 hours and he's singing songs that would shred my throat. I can't even do a Foo Fighters song on like Guitar Hero as the vocalist, let alone friggin' watching him do this this concert. I should say Rock Band, by the way, not a Guitar Hero. But yeah, it was amazing to see it. And I still don't know how this guy could do it. You know, every night is the thing. That's the real thing, is every night.
Kerry sends this one in at 3 goalie night. Apple cider vinegar, cayenne pepper, honey, preferably raw, and hot water. The vinegar helps the pH. Pepper is numbing. That's funny because I drink a shot of apple cider vinegar every day. Mm-hmm. And I've gargled with it before, and that actually does work. That's a great one, Kerry. You know what? I tell you what about Foo Fighters. There's a bar in Toronto, right downtown, Bathurst and Bloor, called Lee's Palace. And this is when I was working at Chorus, and I was dating one of the DJs at 102.1 The Edge, Josie Dye, who dated for like a couple years. And so she took me to this industry show. Industry only, okay? There was about maybe 200 of us. And I went with me, Josie, and Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace, a buddy of mine, lives down the street. Mm-hmm. And we went, and Taggart's like... Because Taggart's big thing is he always likes to goof on Grohl because apparently Dave Grohl, I don't know if he still does... But he used to wear a girdle because he was concerned about his beer gut. So he used to wear a girdle on stage to suck it in, right? And so he's like, oh, this is going to be hilarious. I'm going to bust him about the girdle. So the show is it's Foo Fighters. It's Lee's Palace. Industry only, about 200 of us. And it's loud. It's Dave Grohl, after all. And he's yelling and screaming. And halfway through the show, he does like the walk through the audience and goes up to the bar, shot at Jack Daniels or whatever, chases it with a beer, no microphone. And starts screaming Monkey Wrench on top of the bar so you can still hear it. I have zero idea how this guy can even have a conversation with his wife or any member of his family or anyone at all. Like, it would be the point where you'd get off stage, Wish, and you just want to be, like, perfectly calm, you know, Zen Buddhist and not say anything for the remaining 23 hours of the day.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how I feel now. Like, I'm probably – I should only do about 30 minutes of the podcast because I got to rest my voice for tonight. But I feel like this morning – I was essentially silent. I said maybe 5 or 6 sentences to my family today, and that's it. I had a brief conversation with Maddie, had a brief conversation with you, and this is the longest I've spoken all day long. And I can already feel it. I'm sure you can already hear it. I'm straining in my voice right now.
Jeremy Ballaston writes in, I wonder the same thing for Springsteen, too. I agree, man. Like, that guy's, I think he's got a throat like the Thing from the Fantastic Four. It's just gravel at this point. It's just made of stone at this point. It's just pieces of gravel grinding together to make the sounds that come out of Springsteen's mouth. But listen, man, you are a trooper for coming on. This is why the people love you. The people love you because you sacrificed the body.
Not today.
You sacrificed the body in these games,
dude,
sir.
I was advanced stats pinata this morning on Twitter.
All right. Let's talk about that for a second. Part two of Merrick versus Wyshynski versus Oiler fans and their analytics. I'm going to say the pushback on the Dubnyk-Hendricks trade seems to be that Hendricks is so terrible that it is actually worse than having Dubnyk just walk away as a free agent. And listen, if you want to go by the analytics, Hendricks has not had a good run of things. He's been a player that it is seemingly in decline. Does he have intangibles to bring to a team? Of course he does. Talk to anybody who's played with this guy. A, he's a complete knucklehead, and B, he's an energy guy. He's a good fourth line energy guy, right? The pushback seems to be about the contract, and I just don't get it. Like, I understand that 5 years ago or 6 years ago, the idea of carrying dead cap space is a painful one. You don't want to do it. Right, you don't want to do it. You carry the dead cap space. This cat's got 4 more years on a deal at 1.85 a year on his contract.
That's right.
On next year's cap, a $71 million cap. Okay, mm-hmm. This is the percentage of the cap. It's 2.6% of the cap.
Yep.
If you're a cap team, it's 2.6%.
For a guy that's 53% on the faceoff draw. 53% on faceoffs, fourth line centerman. You know, you guys didn't like Will Acton at $700,000. So you spent an extra $1 million and you got Matt Hendricks, who's can win draws, can kill penalties. I believe today at practice he was out there first unit penalty kill with Boyd Gordon and is scrappy and, to Greg's point, loved by his teammates.
Okay. If you buy him out, according to CapGeek,
all right,
on June 15th, 2015. So let's give him a year. Let's give him a year in Edmonton, see how things pan out, you know, the rest of this year and then maybe another year. All right, let's go with the other option. Let's just say he's terrible. He's abjectly terrible. He's a minus 50, and he's a liability every time he's on the ice, and all of a sudden you can't even put him out there because he's such a liability. And you buy him out on June 15th, 2014. $616,000 on your cap through 2020. Whoa, ladies and gentlemen. Forget about any UFAs. Just send Taylor Hall and Nugent Hopkins to the Rangers now. You'll never be able to re-sign anybody in perpetuity because Matt Hendricks has a $600,000 cap hit through 2020. My God! The entire financial picture of the Edmonton Oilers is ruined because of this dead cap space.
The problem, and I got into it this morning with a couple of people. One of them ended up being Ryan Lambert. But the other was a good buddy of mine, someone that you met at our party at Foley's last year. Remember Matt? He's at 67 Sound on Twitter. Great guy. Awesome dude. Met his wife that night as well. Really lovely lady. Real nice. He's a runner like me. Good dude. And we got into it and went back and forth. And he put something up on Twitter, again, Ree Hendricks. And I'm not going to get this specifically right, but the spirit of it is exactly the same. He said, name me one poor possession player who brings quote-unquote intangibles that's ever helped the team. And the obvious one is Brad May 2007 with the Anaheim Ducks, who were struggling by their standards through January and February. They made the trade deadline that year was 27th of February, late in February. They made the May Day trade, and all of a sudden they're a 750 hockey club again, and oh yeah, they won the Stanley Cup that season. Now, a lot of that Stanley Cup was, yes, of course, the fact that they had two Hall of Fame defensemen in Chris Pronger and Scott Niedermeyer, but there's no denying that the 10 minutes of ice that Brad May played with the Anaheim Ducks that season to close it out and into the playoffs as well helped the Anaheim Ducks win the Stanley Cup. And if you ask anybody on that team, and this is how my conversation this morning with Lambert ended on Twitter, I said, okay, I'll take your opinion over Scott Niedermeyer's, because this is what Scott Niedermeyer has said countless times. The trade that put us over the top was the Brad May trade. Like, the analytics community, in a lot of ways, as this is a wide brush, generally isn't a community that embraces or finds anything of value with people who fight. Nothing. There is zero to be gained by those people. Yet it's funny, but at the same time, they keep talking about, you know, analytics is only one piece of the puzzle. Let me give you, this is a text that I got from a very, I don't want to give away who it is, a very significant amateur scout, right? One that is considered, you know, one of tops in his field, who was watching these exchanges on Twitter and had quite a laugh on it. This is the text he sent me.
Is it Don Waddell?
It is not Don Waddell. It is not the architect of the U.S.
Because that would
team.
Seriously impact your argument.
No, it's not Don. It's not Don Waddell. This is a guy who's known by, if you're a hardcore hockey fan, you know who this is, and everyone who is quote unquote in hockey knows this guy. Watching your Twitter exchange, ha ha ha. My only negative on the advanced stats crowd is they say advanced stats are only a piece of the puzzle, but discount anything that's not stats-based. Well, it can't be both. Like, my question for the advanced stats community still to this day is, if in your mind, because the argument is always, okay, well, you guys just care about stats, and hockey's just not about numbers or other things that go into it as well. Well, what are those things? Like, if the advanced stats community wants to say this advanced stats are only part of the puzzle, what are the other parts? Because that never does get addressed. And when anyone else brings up things that might be part of the puzzle as well, it gets shot down because they can't quantify it.
Yeah.
Can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
Can't have it both ways.
I think, well, first off, it's the puck has moved a little bit on that, by the way. Like, there are stats guys that now accept an element of luck and freely admit that there is an element of luck in everything. The puck bouncing a certain way. The frozen rubber disc on a frozen surface bouncing a certain way, which is unpredictable. It's chaos theory. I agree with that. I think people do this. I think just as badly as mainstream guys and traditional media guys who completely ignore advanced stats for observational evaluation are doing a disservice to themselves. I think stats people that ignore what players and people in the game say are doing a disservice to themselves too. Like when the whole fighting thing happened and the argument was, fights can sometimes change the momentum in a game or shift the momentum in a game or whatever. And the stats all come out and it's like, well, no, traditionally this does not happen. The numbers bear it out. It has no bearing on the game. And then you get guys like Dan Bylsma that say, well, yeah, that fight really changed the course of the game for us. And they're like, well, F you. You don't know what you're talking about. You're only the coach of the U.S. Olympic team. You have no idea of the impact of a fight on a game because the statistics say this. There has to be a happy medium from people who are in the game, play the game, understand the game, see the dynamics of the game as they're standing on the bench, determining which lines go on and off the ice, and also what the numbers bear out and the averages. There has to be a happy medium there, right?
I would assume. Yeah. I don't know. But the wonderful thing about it is, too, like, everyone in this game is in a process of learning that. Like, no one understands the game. Capital U understands it. Everyone, whether you're Scotty Bowman or someone that just started watching the game yesterday, everyone is in a process of always learning this game. And I'm always, I don't get along or I don't play nice in the sandbox with people that won't admit that we're all still just learning this game. I am, right? And advanced stats is something new that I'm starting to learn about. Like, everyone's on a different part of their roller coaster of education about this game. I'm different than you. You're different than Dmitry Chesnikov, who's different than Matt Brown, who's different from Sean Leahy, who's been different from Tally Deshane, who's different from, like, anyone who listens to this podcast. I have a hard time, though, with people think they've got it buttoned up.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm the first one to admit that, and I've said on the podcast countless times, I don't understand this game. Hmm. I still don't. And that's why I love it so much. That's why I still keep chasing this thing. That's why last night before I went to bed, in the new Society for International Hockey Research book that came out yesterday, I spent 45 minutes of my life reading about the history of the Portland Buckaroos. Because I don't understand this game yet. Mm. I don't understand it now. I don't understand it then. I don't understand it 5 minutes ago. And I don't understand it 5 years from now as I speculate. I just have a problem with people that think it's so buttoned up. And I find that the analytics community, in their mind, have this game buttoned up and sewn. But I'm sorry, you don't. No one does.
Could we isolate? I don't understand this game, by the way. Like, next time we have
course.
A really big argument,
dude,
we just drop that in.
That should be my ringtone. that should be on my business card. Jeff Merrick, host Hockey Central. I don't understand this game.
That's funny.
But all right, honestly, okay. do you feel like you understand it?
No, but that's because I'm an American, obviously. Coming up on the show, Michael Rosenbaum, who's also an American. He is an actor you may remember from the television show Smallville. He's got a new film coming out called Back in the Day, and he's a major Rangers fan. So we are having him on to discuss being a Rangers fan in his film.
You know what
career.
You should do? You know what What's you that? Should do for the second half of the podcast, because I got to go punt and rest this voice, is you should just have Tally Deshane co-host, because I'm sure she knows this gentleman a lot more than I do.
We'll be all right, sir. Okay. Question of the day is, where is it? I mean, we can't have Tally in, can we? She's not in the studio, is she? We can't hook
her
up.
She's probably working.
Question of the day, because I would love that, by the way. Question of the day is, what's going to be on your Olympic goalie mask? What would you put on your Olympic goalie mask? Obviously, Jessie Vetter getting the preamble of the Constitution removed from her mask is a point of contention now with the IOC. So what would you put on your Olympic goalie mask? At Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at MVSW, or email to puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. What would be on your Olympic goalie mask? While we have you for the next, like, 10 minutes or so,
yes,
we should talk about what happened in California last night with a team that,
oof,
I swear to the hockey gods, we are not trying to pick on, but it's Vancouver. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I think we should do more with organists on this program. I'm not saying we have like a weekly organ feature. I don't think we need to go that far, but isn't it about time we had more organists on this program? You would have a captive audience of people that are stuffed, a little bit boozy, and are sitting on their couch.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
A whiskey hockey skate. A hockey skate.
What?
That is transparent, and it is filled with whiskey.
Which one of these teams did Vino Cicerelli not play for? I'll tell you which team he did not play for. He didn't play for the 1972 Boston Bruins. I didn't see that guy anywhere in the locker room.
Debate hockey.
Can I ask for a hint, Merrick? Yeah, does he look kind of like a hamster and or groundhog?
Yeah, little bit, yeah.
He said Phil Kessel, by the way. I drowned him out. He said Kessel.
Oh, yeah, Kessel. Bingo, you got it.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
What would you put on your Olympic mask? Justin Bradford, Seth Jones, duh. Vinny sent Canada, Bieber with attitude, USA, John Cena. Russia, a Sasquatch chillin', and Sweden. I don't know how to say, I think it's Ellen Nordegren, the Tiger Woods' ex. Valtteri K writes in, I'm going to say it's Kivenin, a pic of Olli Jokinen yelling and the Ninema death stare. So we get a little bit of the Finland vibe on the mask.
Oh,
I love that.
Bad.
CBJ, as is tradition, Boomer, the lovable penis mascot. Which is a perfect one. Dave Lowe, we got some celebrities here. Dave Lozo writes in.
Hey.
A morbidly obese man being cut out of his apartment while he watches Big Bang Theory and eats a cheeseburger. Hashtag America. Ruby Edmondson from the For the Win blog writes in. Baby Pangs, a.k.a. Penguins, holding up Olympic rings. And let's see who else. John Ritchie, pro-Chechen slogans, you know, for fun.
Oh, jeez.
Bad.
Oh, why don't you just put a target on your head?
That's
holy smokes.
Bad.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad one.
Michael Foyce, by the way, with a great answer. George Washington chopping down a maple tree while winking.
Okay, that's pretty good. That is a pretty funny one. I'll give you that one.
There it is. So,
if you're an Olympic goaltender, would you wear anything on your mask? Would you go ghost mask? Because I would probably do ghost mask with a rainbow in the back. I'd probably do rainbow for. I mean,
oh, you
get
want for a little gay,
right?
Gay rights thing?
Yep. 100%.
Yeah, I would. That was my answer too. I would go plain white mask with a giant pink triangle on the front, where like the Statue of Liberty was on Richter's mask. a giant pink triangle on the front of the white mask is what I would do. I'll tell you what, man. One of my favorite goalie masks of the last several years was one with an absence of color. It was the Jonas Hiller murdered out black mask. Remember that when he had like the black satin finish on his mask?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It was a really, really great mask. I would be down with that too.
Mike, I always loved the ghost mask too. Everyone's so hysterical about painting up their masks. Mike Liut's old ghost mask was pretty cool. Right, just a big, long ghost mask. I thought that looked pretty sweet.
What do these men have in common?
What's up?
Andrew Cogliano, Timu Solani, Corey Perry, Nick Bonino, Jacob Silverberg, and then Corey Perry, and then Timu Solani, and Sammy Vatanen. What do these people have in common, Jeff Merrick?
They all scored power play goals against Vancouver last night.
Mostly. Yeah, mostly.
Okay. Six, I think.
9-1 the final last night. Anaheim and Vancouver. Why? Why did this happen, sir?
I understand the mentality. Like, I understand Vancouver, heading through California, and the Stanley Cup goes through California this year. I'm sorry. And they're big, strong teams in California, and you have to, in your mind, you want to show that you're not going to wilt in the face of, well, one, you're going to go after Los Angeles because they ran your goaltender. And so, you know what? Good for them. I understand that. And then against the Anaheim Ducks, the number one team in the NHL, big, strong, heavy team. You want to show you can hang with that squad physically. The problem is it doesn't look like Vancouver can. And, you know, got shellacked last night to the tune of 9-1. And the problem for Vancouver now is tonight they have to actually face a team they're chasing a playoff spot with, and that's the Phoenix Coyotes. Right, so you've just been through two emotionally exhausting games where you got the stuffing knocked out of you, maybe not so much on the ice but on the scoreboard as well, and now you've got to face the Phoenix Coyotes, a team you're battling with for the fourth and final playoff spot. Mm-hmm. The sledding just got tougher. But can't you understand, Wish, the mentality of the Vancouver Canucks? Like, it's got to be frustrating knowing you're a member of this Vancouver Canucks team, and this is not Vancouver circa 2011, when they probably should have won the Stanley Cup. Like, that was their year. Their door was open. That was their one chance. And now slowly but surely they're going down the other side of that mountain. And it's tough when you try to, you know, grab the reins and try to climb back up. And the one thing you do is you want to show physically you're not going to get pushed around and you're still that great team. Problem is Vancouver's on decline. And the question then becomes, too, at what point do you admit you're in decline and make that decision to start building for the future? Or do you say, you know what? We can stave this off for a couple of years here with a couple of the right moves. And at that point, it gets scary for Vancouver Canucks fans because come trade deadline time, if names like Bo Horvat start to get thrown around, Hunter Shinkaruk start to get thrown around, then you start to get nervous. What do you think?
No, I agree, but I think that a lot of this has to track back to Tortorella too. I mean, you know, this was the big fear when he got there, and for a while it disappeared. Like for a while, the idea that this was going to be trying to, you know, transplant an organ in a body that was going to reject it, that disappeared because they were playing well and they looked different and they were blocking shots, and all of a sudden the pieces were starting to fit. Look at that, Mike Santarelli, truculence, woo! But at some point, it was going to come back to whether or not Tortorella was going to try to make this team into something it's not. And then it was either going to take that and run with it and become something different, or it was going to be a pretender. And you see these games against the California teams, the Kings won, the Ducks won last night, and you just get the sense that they're wearing somebody else's clothes. You know what I mean? And
you know who does that? It's like, you know, for years now, Boston has been a violence magnet for teams. Like, they'll go into Boston and have to prove that they're as tough as the Boston Bruins. That's kind of what's happening in California, isn't it?
Oh, sure. No, there's an element of that for sure.
Teams are going into San Jose, Los Angeles, Anaheim and saying, all right, we got to show that we can play that style of hockey.
Yeah, bring it on. We're not afraid of you. Right.
Bring it on.
We're gonna knuckle up and be as tough as you are. But we've seen it time and time again in this league that when teams try to be something they're not, when their DNA is telling them one thing and the coach is telling them another thing, it never works. And I actually got that question this morning on radio here in D.C. doing the Caps thing I do, was George McPhee, when he played, was a different player than what his teams have looked like as a general manager.
That's a good point.
But you play the hand you're dealt. The Capitals are never going to look like George McPhee when he played, because the core of the team is Alex Ovechkin, Nick Backstrom, and Mike Green. So what are you going to do? I mean, like, you can surround them with a lot of McPhee-type players. You could surround them with a bunch of Troy Browers and stuff like that. But when the heart and soul of your team doesn't have that DNA, you're not going to be that team. The Los Angeles Kings can be that team, because part of their core is a guy like Dustin Brown. Part of their core is a guy like Drew Doughty. Like, there are guys on that team that I think can play that style, and it feels genuine. It feels accurate. Like, when Ryan Getzlaff is the core of your team and Corey Perry is the core of your team, you can play a physical, nasty little style, because especially when you're Corey Perry and you're running goalies and shit. But, like, when your DNA does not point in that direction, you can't become that. And for the Capitals, that's always been the real tough question. The real tough question is, when your core isn't tough like that, and when your core is inherently offensive and you want to veer towards defense, as they did when, you know, Boudreau started to decline out there, then what are you doing? And in Vancouver's case, now that this becomes the real question about this team, is that when literally push comes to shove in the Western Conference playoffs, you know, what are they going to be? What are they going to look like? Because the thing is they've been pushed around in the playoffs in years past. It's why the reason they get this they're so soft thing, which is in a lot of ways unfair. But there's no question that when they match up against a team like Los Angeles, it does become an issue, because LA is a tougher team and they try to play that way and they can't.
Yeah, we have seen teams come together like this. Right, like we have seen this work, even in losing causes. We have seen teams. I mean, this is a quick and simple and easy way for teams to bond. Certainly, winning is another one, but that's harder. This is a quick and easy way for teams to bond. Go into quote unquote war with another team. You know, go to California in sight line brawls, and all come back as a band of brothers. I just don't know. To your point, they have the personnel to do that.
I'll give you another example. Remember when everybody wanted the Buffalo Sabres to become the Boston Bruins after Lucic ran Miller, and they couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, Tortorella for years wanted the Rangers to be something they weren't. Like, that's why he would dog a guy like Gaborik, you know, for not being that kind of player. But he's Gaborik, you know. It's for whatever reason, and it might be that kind of collision between the old school guys that manage and coach teams and the new school NHL. I don't know what it is, but the idea that you can somehow teach toughness, or toughness is going to be acquired through osmosis because the coach is tough, or you add a tough guy on the team.
You know,
Steve Ott goes to Buffalo and all of a sudden they're going to be all Steve Otts. It's a very strange philosophy, but we see it year after year in this league.
I go back to my Pete DeBoer story when he coached the Kitchener Rangers with Steve Downey, who we acquired. And I said, Pete, what are you doing? This guy's crazy. This guy's insane. He hurts people. He'll take bad penalties. You're the Kitchener Rangers. You're supposed to win the Memorial Cup this year. What are you doing bringing in Downey? And I've said it on this podcast before. This is going to appear on Things Merrick Says on Twitter. I know, because I've repeated myself on it countless times, but it totally fits. He said, Jeff, I understand all of this, but I would rather try to tame a tiger than paint stripes on a kitty cat. Folks, you cannot paint stripes on a kitty cat. It doesn't work.
And that brings us back to the Edmonton Oilers. Now, you can add a Matt Hendricks. You could add any number of guys. You can go out and get yourself a power forward like they wanted to do with David Clarkson. But the core of your team remains Nugent Hopkins, Taylor Hall, yeah. Jordan Eberle, Nail Yakupov, Justin Schultz. So, toughness?
Yeah,
I'm not saying Taylor Hall's, you know, a wimp.
Goes to the net hard. Give him
goes
that.
Goes to the net hard. But this is not as if you've got, you know, Milan Lucic, Zdeno Chara at all as the core of your team.
Hey, if you're Edmonton, all right, if you're the Edmonton Oilers, the beginning of the season, I'm sure you would have said to yourself, we're in a position to trade our first-round pick this year. Like, if you would have asked in October, for example, would you trade the first-round pick, they probably would have said yes. Now I'm guessing they probably said no. I think time's expired on my voice, bud.
All right. You punched. I'm everybody punching. Say bye to Merrick. He's good people.
Bye, everybody. Sorry but about the voice.
I've traded up in the celebrity category, though. Out goes a Sportsnet personality, and in comes an actual Hollywood celebrity. Michael Rosenbaum is a guy that you know. He played Lex Luthor on Smallville, been in a ton of movies, and has got a new one coming out called Back in the Day. Reason he's on this very podcast, though, is that, and I say this chagriningly as a New Jersey Devils fan, he is a massive New York Rangers fan. And has been dying, I know, to talk hockey. Plus, he's got a charity thing coming up with Luke Robitaille that we're going to touch on. And, Michael, welcome to the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast. Merrick had to punch because he's got a bad voice.
Merrick.
I know. And here's me, Greg, and we're going to converse now.
Gargle some DayQuil.
Well, we were talking about, like, the remedies. Have you ever had to do that as an actor, like, come up with some kind of a voice remedy when you had bad
voice? Oh, yeah, it's just whiskey. straight Beam or Daniels, and you clear that right up. You know, it's funny because every time you're sick, you notice your friends are always like, just take a shot.
Yeah, no, it's true,
but
though.
It kind of works. It kind of kills anything, you know?
But that's my answer for everything. If I'm out shoveling snow, you take a shot of vodka, you feel better. If I had cold, you take a shot of Bushmills.
If you're
having a bad day at work, something in the coffee. I mean, it usually does seem to remedy a lot
of
situations.
Then you become an alcoholic, and you never have any problems, right?
Well, you push it right to the line, really, is the thing you got to do.
Exactly.
You never go over that line. Okay, so you, sir, are a native of Oceanside. Where's Oceanside, New York, by the way? Where the hell
is
that?
It's in Long Island, and you know, I was born there, and I really grew up in Indiana. I moved when I was 8, but my whole family are New Yorkers from the Bronx and Brooklyn, and you know, I was a Ranger fan when I was out of the vagina. Can you say vagina on the air?
You can say vagina on the air. It's a podcast.
I mean, you're talking
absolutely.
Hockey. It's got to be people who are cool.
We are fine, yes.
Anyway, it was like right out of the, you know, right out of the womb, Rangers jersey, Giants jersey, Mets jersey, Knicks jersey. So I'm pretty much destined for failure for most of my life. However, I'm a big fan.
Well, and you left obviously before what would have inevitably happened, which is that you had been enchanted by the Islanders dynasty. You would have, you know, rejected the teachings of your parents and become an Islanders fan, most likely,
I don't
right?
think so. It's funny. You'd think that being born on Long Island, I'd be, you know, I'd be going to Nassau Coliseum and rooting for the Islanders. But, you know, we used to go to Syosset and watch the Islanders practice. And they were actually really cool, and they'd give us sticks. But I'd go home and say, man, I'm still a Ranger fan.
Yeah,
but I got
exactly.
an Islander stick.
Who were some of your favorite Rangers growing up as a Ranger fan?
I mean, let's see. I mean, you know, Ron Duguay. I like the old Ooh La La Sassoon days. They did those commercials for Ooh La La Sassoon. It was Ron Duguay and Beck and, I mean, Greschner. Ron mm-hmm. Greschner is probably one of my faves, you know. Just, you know, I like that era. You know, I like that the long hair flowing, the tough grinding hockey players back then. So I'd say so. But now, I mean, look at the Rangers now. I think they got a pretty solid squad, although they started out slow and, you know, the 9-game road trip. But I'm buddies with Lundqvist, who's like the greatest guy in the world, so I didn't like him getting a beating in the media. And I was like, he's going to snap out of it. You can't be always great.
When he's
back and he's starting to play some good games, so I'm excited about the Rangers.
When you say you're buddies with Lundqvist, can you like actually like touch his hair, or is that over the line?
Well, I don't think you want to touch any man's hair if you're a man. I mean, I guess you could if you went that way, but you know, Henrique, you know, we're just pals, and you know, I've been to his place in Long Island. He's got this badass town or this big penthouse and overlooks the water, and but he's like the most down to earth, grounded guy in the world, and so.
But that's hockey players, right? I mean, like, I imagine you cross paths with many professional athletes during your years in entertainment, and hockey players are a different cut. Like, they just are like the most down to earth, blue collar, chill guys.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. It's like these are two guys that will face off and beat the hell out of each other and give each other a wink like, all right, good fight. And that's it. It's over. I don't know how many times I've talked to some of my buddies, like, you know, my buddy Sheldon. I say, Sheldon, you know, you hate that guy? No. No, I just deserved to beat him. And that was it. I mean, they seem like they're such laid-back guys. They don't want to fight. They don't want to do. They just want to have a beer, have a good time with their friends. Always those jokers at bars who want to mess with them, you know.
Right.
But yeah, hockey players are definitely the coolest, you know.
Now I know as a young Devils fan that I cried when Valeri Zalapukin tied Game 7 in the 94 Conference Finals.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Obviously, Matt Toth scored in overtime. That made me cry. Mount Vancouver, baby. Yeah, I've heard that call once or twice.
Oh my gosh!
But
you had to be dying. It was the opposite feelings. For you know, you and I were completely in different mindsets. I mean, that was just unbelievable. I was like, they can't lose this. And he did it twice.
Hmm.
You know, if you remember. Yeah. But that was just an unbelievable season when Messier says we will win. I mean, it was just one of those seasons like, you know, a sports team has once in a lifetime. And it was like the Giants when they came back in the last minute to beat the Patriots, which
right.
I mean, I'm like, the Giants, I said to my dad, the Giants never have to win again. I remember my dad saying, after the Cup when the Rangers won in 94, that's it. We don't need to win again. But now, every day, he's like, they look like crap. This is crap. I can't watch this crap anymore. I'm like, Dad, do you remember? Don't listen to me.
I'm still – I up until maybe – you see, and when the Devils made the 2012 final against L.A., I kind of still felt that – I felt that way, one, because – I didn't really feel like it was a very good team, and I wasn't even sure how they made the final that year. But I was as crazy as it sounds, I still, 9 years later, was on a contact high from having seen my team win 3 Stanley Cups in a span of, like, 7 or 8 or 9 years.
It's true. And that's why I find myself always rooting for the underdog. I truly do. Like, this year, even in football, I'm, like, going, you know, it'd be nice to see Seattle kind of win. I like when the underdog – I'm not a big fan of, like, this when it comes to the Yankees or football. I don't like the Cowboys, who haven't been good, but I just don't like the star in their helmet. And everybody's a Cowboy fan in the world. I just kind of like the underdogs. I like when – you know, and the Rangers have been, they've been a decent team for the last few years, but it's been a long time. I just don't want to ever hear, like, 1940, like, those chants again. I don't want to hear 1994.
Oh, it's the greatest.
But
you're right, though. It's like, if you're a fan of a successful team, and I think you probably get this as a Giants fan more than anything else, like, you genuinely feel okay sometimes with losing because you've seen them win. I live in D.C.
Yeah.
The Capitals are here. They've never won anything. And sometimes when the Devils fail, like they did in 2012, and I'm like, boy, that sucks they didn't win. I look around, I'm like, but you guys don't even know what winning is.
Yeah, I mean, how do the Capitals fans, I mean, they always say Ovechkin's, like, you know, the best, but I mean, he's obviously a great player, but what is it? Why don't the Capitals win a cup? Why aren't they even contenders? Why don't they get to that final stage? I just don't get it with that. You know, but then you say, look at the Rangers. The Rangers had a fantastic team for a couple of years, and
mm-hmm.
you know, look at they got veterans with Nash and Richards mixed in with the top defensemen with Staal and Dunna, and you got a great goaltender. Now you got a great backup goaltender. It's like you think, oh, this is they're a shoe in, but you got a 24-20 record. You're playing Detroit, who's like, I mean, I just, when is it going to happen? When are they going to start playing like, you know, they probably should, but easier said than done, you know?
It sounds like you were one of my favorite kind of Rangers fans. You were a tortured one growing up. Like you obviously weren't in the thick of it, because I don't think you were probably in New York for the majority of the 1980s, right? You're out in
Indiana. No, but I would always somehow find myself, you know, either watching on like a satellite dish or listening to a game on the radio, just trying to. I mean, my dad hooked me where I watch every game now. I'm watching almost every Ranger game, and I thought about how many hours of my life I'm wasting. You know, I'm like, oh my God, another. This is 27 hours in the last 2 weeks that I've blown. We've got one win. My dad's like, why are you doing that? I'm like, why are you doing that?
It's delusional. What's
you know, we're hockey fans. We just gotta, you know, it's. I don't. I just like to see hockey. Tell you the truth, if the Rangers are around, I go see the Kings, and you know, I. It's nice that there's hockey here. You know, it's nice that there's good hockey here. They're a good team.
For sure. Were you a Tortorella guy? Were you sorry to see him go?
What's that?
Were you a John Tortorella guy? Yeah.
You know what? I mean, everybody hated this guy. I mean, I always started doing impressions of him. It's like, ask me a question of Tortorella. What do you think? I don't want to answer that question. What are you, an idiot? Are you guys done? Like, everything. He was just so uptight. He was so negative. It was just like, dude, come on. Have a smile. But I kind of liked it in a weird way. And then what do? You get rid of, like, the nastiest coach, the meanest coach, and then you get this new guy in there who's just like I said, you could probably take a nap with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He's
yeah.
just so laid back. They go from the sublime to the ridiculous. I don't know. It's you know, he's doing a good job, I think. I think, you know, there's respect there, and I think Tortorella might have been losing a little respect by the end. And I think, obviously, he's a great coach. He won a Stanley Cup. But I think, you know, the players don't like to get harassed as much as he probably just laid into them. You know, it's like, you know, give us a break. We're doing our best here.
So who wore it better, your bald head on Smallville or Mark Messier's bald head?
Oh, you know, you got to go Mess, man. Mess is the ultimate. I mean, he came in there and got us a cup. I mean, he really took – it's all about leadership, if you think about it, I think.
Right.
You know, you look at the great leaders, they win cups. And, you know, Messier or Lex Luthor, I mean, you know, I just play this – I play tough. He is tough. That's the difference. You know, I'm saying lines and acting like, oh, I'm the villain of the story. And he is the man. So, and also, again, the nicest guy in the world. I mean, I went on a fishing trip with him up in Queen Charlotte Island years ago, and it was a charity event. It was all the old Oilers that had, you know, won the cup, and it was Mike Keenan, and I went with Pronger, and it was just like I was deep sea fishing, and then my actor, you know, wimpy ass gets like sick on the water, you know, seasick, and I'm throwing up with Isaiah Thomas in a boat, a tugboat on the way back to the, I mean, but yeah, he's a Messier is just a genuine guy and tough as nails too.
When Isaiah was throwing up, were you showing him the Knicks roster?
No.
Okay. Just checking. Another question, follow up. Did Pronger just elbow the fish, or was he actually using a line on the boat?
Right. So you're insinuating that Pronger was a dirty player?
No, but he was a gloriously dirty player.
He was chippy. He was like, he played tough. He's like, if you get in that corner, if you're going to go in that corner with me, I'm going to beat you down.
Right.
That was Pronger, and that was like somebody, everybody respected that. But, yeah, he elbowed a few bass.
but the thing about Pronger and the Ducks all said this. I'm sorry, not the Ducks. The Flyers all said this when they acquired him. It's like there's always this thought of this guy can be a problem in the room. Like when he came to Philly, Mike Richards was the captain. They didn't need another captain there. Turns out they did. But the idea was this guy's kind of a loose cannon. And the thing you heard over and over again was, yeah, but every team needs that guy that's going to do something crazy and strike the fear of God in the other team. And watching, I mean, one of the greatest – he has, for my money, two of the greatest postseason runs for any leader that I've seen, which is when he got Edmonton to the final.
Edmonton to the finals in Anaheim.
And actually the Flyers, when they lost to Chicago.
In game 7, right?
It wasn't statistic. Like, it wasn't like he was putting up crazy numbers, but, like, his whole act – remember when he stole the puck after the game and threw it in the garbage and stuff? Like, he did all of these things to be a distraction and to bring it upon himself and take the heat off his team. Those two runs, for me, like, define Pronger as a leader. And the Ducks thing, too, as well. But that guy – listen, he's a dirty player. There's no question about that. I know there's a big I Hate Chris Pronger fan club out there. But for my money, like, you talk about top defenseman of his era.
One of the best.
Without question.
Ever. I think the guy was just he was a force. And, you know, I hate it. You watch him playing against teams, and he's just, again, he's chippy, he's a little tough. But I think you got to be, you're right, you got to get things stirred up. Do you remember when, what's his name? It just blows my mind. The two brothers who played for, they played for Vancouver. One of the guys played for, Courtnell.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Courtnell. Do you remember in I was at the game. It was in Los Angeles. It was a playoff game, and it was the Blues, and Pronger played with Courtnell. And the Kings were winning like 4-0. And Courtnell did something, and he's just this dirty player, whatever it was. I don't know how dirty it was, but he did something, and it just turned the whole momentum of the game around. He's just whether he was just messing with somebody, whether they had a hard hit, whatever he did. Those are the kind of things that change the game, and they get the other team out of it psychologically. So. Mm-hmm. You know, Pronger was able to do that. Yeah, he would take the puck, throw it in the trash. He would give a little cheap shot. I mean, I never thought he'd try to kill anybody, but, you know, it is hockey, so sometimes you forget, you know, rules.
I thought maybe, just maybe, he tried to kill somebody at some point. But what's the vibe like out in LA for these games for someone like you? I mean, it's kind of cool to see the celebrity element come back to these games, and I'm sure you're probably someone who's been on the reg there, and all of a sudden like Beckham starts showing up, right? You're like, come on, bandwagon.
Yeah, I kind of actually got pissed off because I was like, I actually emailed somebody. I was like, can I get tickets? They're like, yeah, we don't have any more comps. I'm like, all right, well, I'll pay. And I got a little upset. I was like, wait a minute. Okay, so do you remember when I came when the Kings couldn't win and there was like 5,000 seats available? You could actually take a nap during the game and have 4 seats to yourself.
Right.
So now I want to go, but of course that's, you know, I guess that's what happens. But, I think Luke Robitaille's done a fantastic job with, you know, with the team and the just getting, you know, getting hockey out there and getting the celebrities there. It's all, you know, you want people to come to the game. You want to get some excitement. I mean, New York has the Garden, you know, and everybody's always excited. You never know who you're going to see at the Garden. And that's what he's trying to create in Los Angeles. And he has done a great job of that. You know, they're doing the big outdoor game this year. And, you know, he asked me, he's like, you're going to get a whole bunch of your boys to come, right? I'm like, yeah. So, you know, it's nice. It's a great arena. Staples Center is, you know, it's fantastic to go see a game. It's no Garden, I'm not going to lie to you.
Right.
But, you know, we definitely have a lot of fun. But, yeah, there are a lot of people who don't know shit about hockey. Can you say that on the air?
You can say that on the air, too.
they don't know shit about hockey, and they're coming to these games, and they're just, you know, they want to be seen, or they're like, hey, I'm going to a hockey game. So it's like, you know, that's what it is. It will always be like that. But, you know, it's –
Are you trying to insinuate that the Schnooki and JWoww from Jersey Shore don't know anything about hockey when they showed up at Staples for a Kings game?
I don't know. There might be some insinuation. I think so. But, you know, right, people do that.
You mentioned Luke Robitaille. You got a celebrity shootout event coming up on January 19th?
Yes. This Sunday. I'm flying outside. I'm promoting the movie now, and then Saturday night I'll fly out to Utah, and it's for Echoes of Hope. And Luke and his wonderful wife, Stacia Robitaille, they have this charity which helps foster youth and really gives them a sense of like family by providing, you know, the tools they need, you know, to help them, whatever they want to do. And it's a fantastic charity. And, you know, it's really about, it's family oriented. It's like, you know, just, it's kind of like Big Brother in a lot of way. It's like just being there. And, so they do this charity every year at Sundance. And, it's a lot of great players are playing. So, I mean, it's like, I think Claude Lemieux, Robitaille, Brendan Shanahan, Sean O'Donnell's coming out. It's always a bunch of actors, you know, like David Boreanaz from Angel, and you know, a bunch of like Michael Vartan, and it's just a lot of laughs. And I think last year they made me sing "O Canada," and I was like, I made a joke to Luke. I go, "Why don't you ever sing O Canada?" And he goes, "Here's the mic in front of a packed crowd." And I'm like, but I remembered I live in Vancouver while I was shooting Smallville, and so I didn't know all the words. But I knew most of them, so it was like, oh, Canada. And I actually did a decent job. I don't know how I pulled it out.
If I forget the words, I just insert the words, you know, syrup.
Maybe
or
I just
beaver,
French.
Mountie, you know, rush, tragically hip. There's a number of words you can just kind of throw in there and hope that you're doing the right thing. Sunday, January 19th at the Park City Ice Arena in Park City, Utah. If you want to check out the shootout and the skate party, it's $30, $20 kids tickets. The youth clinic that they're holding is $75, and you can I'll tweet out the URL for the tickets because it's quite long, but it's coming
up.
That'll
be fantastic.
It's a cool event. Chris Chelios there as well, which is always a good time.
Oh yeah, how can I forget Chelly?
Yeah,
Chris Chelios, one of the best ever. Yeah, he's another great guy, but he'll be there. So I mean, how do you not go hang out with all of us or them?
I see Modest Yahoo is going to be there. Is he a hockey
player? Yeah, he kicks it.
No shit.
Man. He is a talented man. I can't spell his name or ever say it right.
Yeah.
So I just go,
no idea.
Modest Mouse. Another man. But
and you got a flick coming out called Back in the Day, which is, from the looks of things, fits into one of my favorite genres, which is dude comes back home and tries to relive his high school days, a.k.a. many a John Cusack comedy from the classic days, a.k.a. Just Friends, the Ryan Reynolds film I dig. Tell us about Back in the Day.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, I think, more like a John Hughes meets Adam Sandler. If you can kind of combine those two, it's not as cliche because there's not the stereotypical endings and this and that, but, you know, it is a guy who's kind of trying to, I think all of us try to find ourselves, and I'm 41, and I'm finally figuring out what makes me happy. You got to do what makes you happy. You got to hang around the people that make you happy. And he goes back home for reunion, and he actually inadvertently falls in love with this town that he ran away from so long ago. And, you know, it's about lost love, seeking vengeance on your old high school principal who tortured you as a kid, cruising the strip, eating at the old Pizza King. And, you know, you got geniuses like Harlan Williams, who's one of the funniest guys I know. He plays this guy that I grew up with, Skunk. They're all based on characters I grew up with. Well, most of them. And, you know, he's like, he's the kind of guy who's like, you know, from Dumb and Dumber, remember him? You drinking from Grandpa's cough medicine? Drinking some of Grandpa's cough medicine? Are you there, buddy? You know, that's Harlan Williams, you know, with the old. So he's in that Nick Swartzen from Grandma's Boy and all the Sandler films, and he's absolutely hilarious. Marina Baccarin from Homeland, she's beautiful and the love interest in the movie, and just a bunch of funny, funny people. So I got them together and made this little indie, and, you know, it's hard because you're going against $50 million movies and you're this little indie million-dollar movie with no publicity and advertising, and you're really using word of mouth and social media, but people are loving it. So I hope, you know, people can check it out and they can download it on iTunes or see it in the theater. So it's pretty exciting, though.
It's available now on iTunes?
Yeah, you can download it on iTunes and video on demand and all that, and you can even go to the theater and see it now. So that's what they're doing with a lot of independent movies now, where if people, you know, if it's not playing in their city, they could actually download the movie, which helps independent films.
Oh, the on-demand stuff is insane for cinema. I mean, granted, like, there's nothing beating seeing a film in the theater, but the idea of being able to catch, especially like some of the docs that are out and some of the, like yours, like low budget comedies and stuff that you really want to check out that you might have trouble finding or don't want to wait until, you know, Blu-ray or whatever. It's fantastic for that. And so it's really kind of revolutionized our access to films like yours. And I think
it's done wonders. And, you know, we're doing a Q&A tomorrow night at the City Walk here in Los Angeles, and the whole cast is coming, and it's just, you know, it's exciting, but it's like, you know, for those people who can't see it in either Phoenix or Orlando or New York or Seattle or any of these other cities, you can actually go, shh, well, you know what, I could just download it right now and watch it with my friends. And so, it's revolutionary. It's, you know, I don't know if I could make a movie without it, an independent movie. So it's, you really just need help. You know, and a lot of these, I think a lot of people, the misconception is that all these independent movies are just real artsy and slow, and this movie back in the day is actually really fun, and it looks, you know, it looks big budget, and we got tons of great 80s and 90s music. So you remember that song by Space Hog?
Yeah, that one.
You remember that? You used to jam to that.
Oh, jammed it out, of course.
That.
Yeah, and I said to myself, how did that guy land Liv Tyler? It's inexplicable. He's got crazy bad glasses.
The guy from Space Hog dated Liv Tyler?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was his, they were together.
Wow, you know stuff others don't.
Oh, I'm very well schooled. So what? You thought you were getting off this podcast before I ask you a pop culture question? Here comes the Smallville question for you. I would not be doing my job as a geek if I don't ask you one. No, it's not going to be about the show.
Kristen Crook, I will tell you that.
All right, well, clear that up.
Lana Lang,
what, do you get
and
the
I, only on screen, not off screen, only in my wildest dreams.
Well, first off, it's inspiring to see that show has now inspired the way that other television shows approach their superhero
properties.
Are you
saying that everyone else is just ripping off Smallville? I think that's what you're saying.
I'm saying there's a certain element of let's keep the guy out of the costume on Arrow, for example, that was through their first season at the very least, but... The question I had for you though is about Lex. Like, assuming they're going to go that way in a Man of Steel sequel, the name that they keep throwing out there is Bryan Cranston as Lex.
I think he already turned it down. I was hearing Joaquin Phoenix, but I'm not sure that's true either. I don't know if they've you know, they've gotten to their guy. I mean, by the way, they're both geniuses. So kudos if one of those guys do it. But the big question is always, so would you do it? And my answer is, well, I'm not an idiot. It's a huge motion picture, but from a big studio, great director who directed 300. So, of course, I would definitely.
Cranston, you know, always seemed like a cheat because he was already bald, like on Breaking Bad.
It yeah, kind of seemed we've already like, seen this. He's just playing that character. Yeah, that's true.
So here's the question: like, do you have a dream Lex for film outside of yourself? Like, the one for me was always Spacey, and I thought he did an amicable job in Superman Returns, even though he was just kind of like playing an extension of an older character in that movie. Is there one actor out there that you say, I wish this guy would just shave the head and be Lex?
One actor that I think would be a great Lex, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
I mean, you know who I think's fantastic, who could do it, is like a Christian Bale.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, I just think that he's like one of the best actors out there. I mean, I didn't love
For sure.
American Hustle, but I think he's like one of the top. You know, I mean, he's just got that edge that you just need for a Lex Luthor character. You got to have that edge where you could just snap like that, you know.
Yeah.
And there's only one other guy I know who could do that, and you're talking to him. No, I'm just kidding with you. Or Messier. It's Martin Messier, really.
I've heard the audio of Christian Bale, and yeah, and I think he can snap pretty quickly.
yeah, who hasn't heard that? Wow.
Temporary.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, dude. Hey, listen, you've given us more time than I could possibly want. You are a good man. We're going to pimp the charity event. We'll pimp the movie. Finally, sir, as we bid you adieu, will the New York Hockey Rangers make the playoffs this season?
I promise you, on my career, the Rangers will be in the playoffs. I even think they're going to win. I have a weird feeling. I'm telling you. They've got not only a great goaltender, they have a great backup, great defense. Look at their defensemen with Girardi, Staal, McDonough. I mean, come on. And then you got a guy like Zuccarello who's the little rat who's just whining around and finding a way to score and get, you know, chippy. And you got the leaders, the Nash and the Richards. You look out, man, just because they're 24-20, it doesn't mean anything. Just wait. Just wait. Rangers,
yeah.
Baby. I can feel it.
For sure. For sure. All right.
Look, if you're not a Ranger fan out there, still go see the movie.
go see the movie. Absolutely. Listen, the celebrity puckhead community needs to be supported. You need to be supported. Alan Thicke needs to be supported.
Absolutely.
Elijah Cuthbert needs to be supported. And now we have a new, I don't know if you know this, but a new addition. You probably know this as a Ranger fan, but the lovely and talented Margot Robbie from The Wolf of Wall Street has been outed as a New York Rangers fan.
Ooh,
DiCaprio's
like
wife in the movie.
She's
a huge Rangers fan. So now we have her too.
How hot is she?
smoldering, sir. Supernova, sir.
Oh,
and she is now part of the Puckhead family, the celebrity Puckhead family.
Yeah, well, good for her. Good for her.
All right, the movie is back in the day. The actor and the writer and the director and all that good stuff is Michael Rosenbaum. Thank you so much for your time, sir, and we'll catch up with you soon, and good luck with charity
event. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Lex Luthor himself, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Rosenbaum on Smallville. I like how Merrick bailed for like what is the single most pop culture-y interview we've ever had on the podcast. I feel like I'm cheating on him. I feel like he would have been in the corner like looking through his old junior hockey media guides while this interview was happening. Real quick before we head out, because I got a boogie. And by the way, the Lex Luthor question is one that I'm interested to hear your thoughts on if you want to email in. Matthew Toy writes in, Fassbender would rule as Lex. Joaquin Phoenix is an interesting choice, but I don't necessarily know if he's could be as sinister as the role would require. But I do like the idea of going younger. I do like the idea in a Man of Steel sequel, if they're going to go down the Lex road, to not make him older, but to do him more like an evil I don't know, like a, not like a Bill Gates type, but like a sinister sort of Mark Zuckerberg, let's say. That's the kind of thing I'd like to see, is an evil, and maybe you think Mark Zuckerberg is evil to begin with, but an evil Mark Zuckerberg is the way I'd like to see them handle Lex in a Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash movie. All right, ladies and gentlemen, real quick, because I know we got a boogie, but the Jesse Vetter story that we had on Puck Daddy today is worth your time. She had the Constitution, words from the Constitution written on the back of her mask. The IOC asked her to take it off. It's a real shame that in an event that is inherently political, be it because they play national anthems after the athletes win or carrying flags or whatever the heck it is, that personal expression like that can be denied. There is absolutely nothing propagandish about the U.S. Constitution. It's a document that sets the rules and regulations for government. It is not as if she has, you know, Team America, F yeah, written across the front of her mask. It's a joke. And think of it this way. She's allowed to have the Statue of Liberty and a bald eagle on her mask, but she can't have We the People on the back of her mask. Isn't that insane? And on top of that, how the hell is Slovakia getting away with having their entire national anthem written on their jersey in small type if she can't have the preamble of the Constitution on the back of her goalie mask? So, anyways.
And did you see Chara is the flag bearer and missing two games?
Missing two games for the Boston Bruins. Can you imagine, producer Matt Brown, can you imagine if this was Alexander Ovechkin doing such a thing?
Gary would freak out.
Oh, my God. It'd be like, deport the man. He doesn't care about the National Hockey League. All right. Kings of Hockeywood writes in, Joaquin Phoenix, not sinister. Have you forgotten Gladiator? That's sniveling. That's not sinister. That's sniveling. There's a difference. Lex Luthor does not need to be sniveling. Lex Luthor is the greatest criminal mind in the history of the world. All right, that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me and Merrick and Michael Rosenbaum and everything else that happened today. We will talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you.